the latest edition of Serie Awesome. Coming up on the show today, myself and Matteo Bonetti will be joined by Gabriele Marcotti, Nicky Bandini and Mina Rizzucchi. And this is what we'll be talking about. Juventus impressing on their first outing under Andrea Pirlo. Next up for them, it's Roma. Gab Marcotti joins us to discuss the Giallo Rossi's bad start to the season. And speaking of North American-owned Serie A clubs, he also spoke to Parma's new owner, Kyle Kraus. He'll tell us more about that. Meanwhile, an inspired substitution for Napoli changed everything. So who is Victor Osimhen? And why should we be so excited? Zlatan is the man for Milan, and Arturo Vidal is reunited with Antonio Conte, bringing a rare smile back to the face of the Nerazzurri manager. This and more on the way in Serie Awesome. Hello and welcome into the latest edition. K. Murray, Matteo Bonetti here with you. You'll be happy to know that Marcotti is back with us on this edition. We had so many people writing to us, a little bit upset that he wasn't on last week's show.
Rightfully so.
Rightfully so. Well, he's back. And so are Juve, it seems, under Andrea Pirlo. Now, before we do invite Nicky Bandini to talk about what we saw in their first outing on match day one, changes and surprises in the lineup, Matteo.
Yeah, massive surprises, I'd say. A 3-5-2, so a different formation. There was about five starters missing for Juventus. When you go forward and you say, right, here's the best starting 11 that Juventus can field. So to perform the way they did with a bit of a makeshift lineup and a lot of the surprises that we'll get into in just a bit, I thought was incredible from Pirlo that he had his tactics hammered out so perfectly in match day one, only a few weeks removed, Kay, from getting his coaching thesis delivered in, getting his coaching badges, and making it all look seamless. I thought it was a brilliant display.
Let's see what Nikki thought as we welcome her in.
I mean, the thing that jumps out about me is the simplest thing, Kay. It was fun. Like, it was fun watching Juventus, which Juventus haven't been fun in a while. And that was exactly what was supposed to be Maurizio Sarri and what he brought, right? You bring attacking football, you bring a sort of desire to win in a different way to how Max Allegri was winning, because Max Allegri was winning. You already had that part of the equation. So that was always the idea under Sarri, and it didn't happen. But this was right away a really sort of entertaining Juventus. They were so, so much faster. I think Sarri spoke over and over again in his press conferences about this. Oh, we're moving the ball too slowly. We're too slow in possession. And at times it had me wanting to tear my hair out, frankly, because I was like, you're the manager. If they're moving it too slowly, that's your job. Fix it. And it does raise a little bit that question in my mind now, even more of, were the players just not with him? Were the players just not willing to do what he was asking? Because the switch has really felt like, given this is game one, night and day. I mean, even though you could look back a couple of months and they beat Sampdoria 2-0 and it was perfectly convincing, the performance is something completely different. And of course, that's also down to new players. I think the decision to bring in three really young players right away, Dejan Kulusevski, no surprise there. We know he's brilliant. We were looking forward to seeing him and he lived up to it. Weston McKennie was not the expected inclusion in central midfield. I think most people had Arta in this starting 11, so that was an interesting choice, and I think it was a very good choice for this game at least. And then the big one, Gianluca Frabotta, out of nowhere. I mean, this guy was the fourth choice left back, I would say, going into the season. Obviously, Alexandre is injured, so that part of it is decided for you. But Luca Pellegrini, fine, probably on the way out of the club, so you understand not going to him next. But then De Sciglio's next in the pecking order. Like, nobody had Frabotta in their starting 11 for this game except Andrea Pirlo, and it turned out to be another good decision.
You didn't have Frabotta in your lineup. You were on the call for it, Matteo.
I didn't, and it was actually a bizarre revolving door at the left wing-back position, because just before the match day, the days before, in the Italian media, they were all saying that Pellegrini was the one who was going to be taking up the role from Alexandro, who's going to be injured now for a few match days. And now Pellegrini headed to Genoa, a young player, a bit of a hothead. We saw what he could do at Cagliari. I think he's actually a very technical fullback, but I wonder if it's something in his character that Juventus just want to see a maturation. Then cue Matteo De Sciglio, who's been linked to Roma, who's been linked to a move away that Juventus fans were, I think, for the most part, quite happy to see the back of. And then all of a sudden it turns out that De Sciglio is going to be in the starting lineup. And cue Frabotta, Nikki, as you said, a complete surprise, but maybe a sign that Andrea Pirlo is not just going to conform to the status quo, and that he is very much going to make his own decisions, no matter how risky they are. and pick the team that he thinks gives him the best chance of winning without going with the tried and tested players. Because Frabotta, quite frankly, only one start with Juventus, played for the Juve B team in Serie C, the third division. There's quite a risk, perhaps, on his first day.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to add to that, like, Frabotta was supposed to be leaving too. Frabotta's been linked with a bunch of clubs in Serie B. That's the difference. Those players you just talked about, Deschino and Pellegrini, are supposed to be going off to Serie A clubs. Frabotta was supposed to go out on loan this season. That was what was in all the papers, like, a couple of days before the game, honestly. Like, so he was not even sort of perceived as part of the plan for this season, let alone for this game.
So who stood out for you the most, Nikki? Because there are a few contenders in this one, especially looking at the likes of a Weston McKennie, but I think Aaron Ramsey surprised many too. Who was your star on the day?
Yeah, that's a really tough one. I almost sort of feel like there were like phases in the game where I had different people. At the beginning of the game, Kulusevski saw such a good goal and you just think, oh, this is what we wanted to see, right? Like, this guy is going to be a star. I really believe he's going to be a star in this league. McKennie was something of an unknown for me. I know he played at Schalke last season, but I don't get as much time to watch the Bundesliga as I do Serie A. And so I was really impressed with how he approached the game. I think you said it on last week's podcast, Matteo, about like the role you expected him to play, a box-to-box role, and it was that. But I was still surprised by how well he sort of interpreted it. I think he was exactly sort of, I don't know, I feel like he, in that first phase of the game, I think he really embodied what this new Juventus was, right? Because there was that sliding challenge that just sort of, it's only 1,000 fans in the stadium, but you still felt it. Like that sliding challenge that launches Aaron Ramsey to set up Cristiano Ronaldo to hit the bar, and it all starts with that McKennie challenge. And you felt, even though it's 1,000 people in the stadium, you felt them get up. You felt them, oh, okay, like this is something. And I think that he's already sort of secured himself his place amongst Juventus fans in that moment, even, let alone what he did the rest of the game.
Secured his place among the fans, but you wonder if he'll be in the starting lineup again next time out.
Right, and I think that's a big question, because I think there's definitely an element there of horses for courses in different games. I don't think Frabotta is necessarily going to play next game. We'll see. But like, I think you're going to see Pirlo use this squad. And I think that's actually really important, by the way, because I think reading... I feel we're going to do a lot of this season, like looking at Pirlo's thesis and looking at things that happen on the pitch and see where they come together. And I think the one thing he talks about explicitly, beyond all of his tactical stuff, and there was some really fascinating tactical stuff that came out of his thesis that I think we saw on the pitch, but he talked about enthusiasm. He talked about when you have players believing in what they're doing, and that's why he talked about wanting to play attacking football, you get a better performance out of them. And that, I think, is the sort of the thing that you get from him as a player who played recently, who's just done this, who like really still remembers what it felt like to be in those teams at Juventus specifically that were the best teams they'd had in years. And I think that I would be very, very unsurprised if we see a lot of use of the whole squad this season, if we see a lot of inclusion of players at different times, more players used, because I think that's going to be part of it, get everyone to buy in.
Nikki, the biggest thing for me, as you mentioned already, the speed of play. And just to think to last summer when Maurizio Sarri first took over and the way that he had the team training, which was really quick first touches. He wanted all the Juve players to take one touch and then get rid of the ball. We didn't see that at all last season. So to have Andrea Pirlo come in and still demand this high line attacking football, but the biggest difference for me that stood out was how vertical Juventus could be as well. It wasn't side-to-side passes or passes back to the center backs and they're just playing a five-a-side game to get out of their own half. I thought they looked quick. They were looking for the passes high up the pitch, which makes sense when you're not really playing with a striker. And I know that there's been a lot of talk of, can Ronaldo play without a striker that facilitates for him? I didn't expect Aaron Ramsey to be the biggest facilitator for Ronaldo. I mean, he was absolutely everywhere. He was the glue guy between the midfield and the attack. He was making the smartest runs, finding space constantly in the final third, and really helping out Kulusevski and Ronaldo. And to me, that was the biggest surprise, is how good Aaron Ramsey was a little bit higher up the pitch. A lot of the times he was perfectly in line with Kulusevski and Ronaldo. He was one of the strikers, taking up any position he saw fit. And I really think that trident, Ramsey, Kulusevski, and Ronaldo, showed that they can work out brilliantly. And that was without Paulo Dybala, who's obviously going to be in the starting lineup when he's healthy. And then a striker like Morata, who I'm not sure if he's an every game starter, but definitely has a role to fill on this Juve side.
Oh, you said Morata. So let's talk about Alvaro Morata.
Well, can I just pick up very quickly on what Matteo said? I mean, Ramsey, I think you said as well. Okay, completely agree. I think it was one of his best games in the Juventus shirt. I know you have Gab coming on later, and I want you to ask him from me if Ramsey is still, what was his phrase, the tallest pygmy in the village, because he was having none of my Aaron Ramsey's a better player than you think he is chat last season. And I think that this is really exciting because, yeah, he was brilliant. And exactly as Matteo says, the interchange was what made it. Aaron Ramsey was a center forward at some point. It was amazing.
Any chance to shove something back in Gab's face, we will be happy to do that.
But Matteo did take one step ahead there and mention Alvaro Morata. Mm-hmm. That has to have come as a bit of a surprise, even for most Juve fans, to see him back there. Nicky, what have you made of this move?
I'm in love with this deal, honestly. Like, I love it from all sorts of different angles. The sort of two players that we were expecting again. It's all about defied expectations with Juventus, isn't it? We were expecting Luis Suarez, and there's been a whole saga there about cheating on language tests to try and get his Italian citizenship. He's obviously not coming. Then it was Edin Dzeko. He's not coming. But Morata is totally different to either of them. In terms of what he gives you on the pitch, I agree with Matteo. I don't think he's going to be an every game option. There's a big question mark about how specifically he might interact with Ronaldo, because they didn't get on the best together when they were in Madrid. Although, of course, it wasn't just Ronaldo that he was trying to play alongside. He was trying to break into the BBC at its height. And I think that's worth thinking about. But he is a very vertical player. He's very much... There's a word that has come up a lot talking about Pirlo's Juventus in his thesis, profondità, which you could literally translate as profundity, but I actually struggle to put it into English sometimes, this concept. What it really means is that ability to get in behind. And he gives you that. But I love it much more still on a personal level, because Alvaro Morata is a Real Madrid youth player who feels to me like he's a Juventus youth player. He honestly does. He was only there for 2 years, but in those 2 years, he was... you go back and look at his interviews. He talks about how I came here as a boy, I left here as a man. He met his wife while he was there. He was as happy as he's been anywhere in his entire career there. And I think one of the things that I really sort of came straight into my head with this transfer, this thing that he spoke about specifically in interviews at Juventus was how he felt like he was made part of the group right away. And he said, again, specifically, it wasn't like this in Madrid. When I came to Juventus, I could go and I could sit and I could eat with the senior players. I could sit with Buffon and I could sit with Pirlo. He names Pirlo in these old interviews. I've gone back and looked at it. And I think that rapport, that feeling that he has with the club, is really important. And of course, he's a completely different place in his career as he was then. But I think it matters. And I think that this was the place that got the best out of him. And that relationship with Pirlo, who, by the way, himself this weekend was saying, I think it's really important there's mutual exchange between manager and players. Like, I think that players should always feel they should talk to me and it's a two-way conversation. I love it. I really think if Morata was going to, at this odd point in his career, because he's 27 now, he didn't have the best season at Atletico. You sort of think this should be the point where he's giving his very, very best. I think it's the perfect place for him. And he doesn't have to start every game. I really don't think he will. To be a contributor in this team that wants to play vertical football, that wants to use his profondità, his pace in exploiting those spaces. I love it. I'm really excited to see how it works out.
So, and his wife is Italian as well. So maybe there is that personal angle, which makes sense for his whole family.
She's super happy on her Instagram account.
Yes.
You can see.
Yeah. We did the hashtag analysis.
Yes.
I'm not as in love as with the move as Nicky is. I still think that Edin Dzeko would have been a better fit for Juventus's front line just because of everything
you
that
wait
he...
for no one.
100%, but there's a reason why Dzeko was more of the A choice. Yes, a short-term solution, but when you have Cristiano Ronaldo, he's also a short-term solution. He's not going to be at Juventus for much longer, and you need to win now. And I think Dzeko gives you the best opportunity to do just that. I could see Dzeko taking up more of that Karim Benzema role where he holds up play well. His touch is so underrated. And you know all these people that make fun of Dzeko for all the missed chances? It is true. He does miss a lot of chances, but he does so much else. Off the ball, on the ball, when he's outside the box, holding a play.
inviting those runs from the wide areas to help out Ronaldo, to feed him in space, to give him that little through ball. I think Dzeko does so much for the team that maybe is a little bit underappreciated. And I think right now, if you want to win now, Dzeko, I would take him slightly over Alvaro Morata. Morata is more of a long-term solution, and he has different characteristics. But for Ronaldo, who you're trying to make happy, who you obviously need to get the best out of, give me Edin Dzeko.
So my question on that is not that I don't love Edin Dzeko, because I actually totally agree with some of the things you said about people criticizing his goal-scoring record. I think he's incredibly... I think even still at this point in his career, somehow I think he's been underrated in European football for how good he has been. Having said that, this... another key sort of plank of Pirlo's idea, we press all over the pitch. Now, you're already giving up Ronaldo in that. Ronaldo is not pressing all over the pitch for you. Can you really afford Pirlo, can you really afford Ronaldo and Dzeko together in the starting 11? You're going to lose a lot of pressing, I think, with those two.
My only question on Alvaro Morata, and maybe it is that it's a better fit for him than anywhere else that we've seen at Juventus, so anyone could argue that, is that in Spain there's a term that you've got milk in the veins if you're a little bit soft. And I know that he's been accused of being that. Is there anything that you've seen in him that suggests that, Nikki?
Well, I mean, you know, you could take the things that I said as positive about him and turn them around. You could say, what sort of player needs to be in the perfect environment where he feels like he has all these people who are willing to help him out? You know, he should have been at Madrid and he should have been strong enough to take control of it. And look, last season at Atletico, it was kind of his job to lose and he lost it. You know, Diego Costa kind of took his job. I think you can absolutely pick lots of holes in Morata. He's not, and he's never has been, and he's not going to be a 20-goal-a-season striker, in my opinion. That's not what he's going to give you. But I think he meshes with the vision of what Pirlo is trying to do, is why I like it. And I think he's going to fit right into a team that's got a really sort of positive vibe about it right now that matters, because I think that the positivity was lost last season.
Yeah, and Morata with Juventus, he wasn't, as you said, in every game scorer. He was more of someone who would come in a lot of times off the bench. He started, I think, only half the games in the season, but he played a lot of important Champions League games. And I remember he scored in the semifinal. He scored a lot of big goals in big games for Juve. So I think the memory for Juventus fans is a very positive one with Alvaro Morata. They did not want him to leave, obviously, Real Madrid. They put these sneaky little clauses in where they can buy him back after two, after three. 3 years, and that's exactly what they did. But with all the transfers thrown around for Morata, of how expensive a player he's been, he still hasn't shown himself to be a clinical finisher consistently, someone who can get you more goals than 10 to 12
but
a season.
But you have Ronaldo. You have
exactly.
Ronaldo.
But that's a great point.
That's
a great point. And also Paulo Dybala, who has to start centrally, as we saw last season. That's where Dybala is at his best. So I still think that my best trident, even with Dzeko or Morata, is Dybala, Ronaldo, and Kulusevski. I don't know necessarily if in this look that we're seeing from Pirlo, you really need that striker. And I think Ronaldo, as he's getting on in age, yes, he's better with a striker alongside him, but when he gets central and with his ability to sort of levitate at the apex of his jump, and he's so good in the air, you can get by.
Yeah, well, that is Morata. We'll see what happens with him. And it's definitely interesting going forward to see what we'll get from Juve, particularly in terms of lineup next time out. Nikki, thanks so much for joining us. We'll speak to you again next week.
Speak to you next week.
Next up for Juventus, it's Roma. And all you listeners will be very happy to know that this week we do have Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, before we talk about this game, Nikki wanted us to remind you that you said about Aaron Ramsey, he was the tallest pygmy in the village. She wanted your response to what we saw last weekend.
Oh, yes, because, of course, after... Well, first of all, I did respond very politely to Nikki on social media. However, if she really, really wants to go there, Nikki, it's been one game. How many false dawns have there been with this guy? Not to mention the amount of money he's trousering. Come on now. Come on. Let's give it a little more time.
There we go. We'll be continuing this one. We'll do Aaron Ramsey watch on a weekly basis. Well, we'll see if he actually plays in the game against Roma. Roma, though, Gab, they thought they'd got off to an okay start, a 0-0 draw with Verona, which would have given them a point, but now they've been forfeited and it's a 3-0 loss. Can you tell us more about this situation?
Yeah, look, first of all, regular people who listen to me regularly know that I hate lawyers and I hate bureaucrats. And this is beyond stupid. Okay, Roma have a midfielder named Amadou Diawara, who turned 23, I think, over the summer. There are squad roles in Serie A, like there are in every other league, where you can register a certain number of players as sort of 23 or over, and you can have an unlimited number of players who are 22 or younger. And when you fill out your squad list for the game, you have to specify who's in what category. For whatever reason, this wasn't done at Roma. They had him down as one of the 22 and under players who don't count against the total. Wouldn't have made any difference because they could have registered him as a 23-year-old because they still had spare spaces there. So it made zero differences. But hey, it's an administrative error. They get no advantage out of it. And as a result, they forfeit. Now, Longo has resigned. He's going to Verona, funnily enough. But that was something that was going to happen earlier. Morgan De Sanctis has been, it's kind of funny. There's a very well-known blogger in Rome called Erfaina, who called him incompetent. And Morgan is all upset about it and has now sued him for libel. So I'm going to steer clear of calling anybody incompetent here. I'm just going to say it's a diabolical and stupid system. One that docks you points for this. It's obviously an administrative error. It's an administrative error in good faith. You gained zero material advantage out of it. This isn't like playing a player who was suspended and whatever else the way Rafa Benitez did at Real Madrid a few years ago, as you know well. I don't know what to say. This is just stupid.
It's Pantaleo Longo, this guy who's been sacked for it. He took fault for the error. He said it was my responsibility. Obviously, Roma will appeal this situation. We'll keep our eye on it and what's going on. But do you foresee any problems for the Juve that we saw last weekend against Roma this Sunday?
Well, I think it's going to be a different Juve as the season progresses, right? Andrea Pirlo was kind enough to offer us his blueprint, because it's all in his thesis of the football he wants to play. It certainly looked a lot more fun and a lot more attacking and a lot better against what I thought was a very defensive Sampdoria side. But I think as injured players return, I think it's necessarily going to look different. The one thing that should make this game very exciting is that we have Fonseca on the other side, who obviously likes to take the game to the opposition. We have, in some ways, we may well have a mirror formation. You have the whole Dzeko subtext to this. So I think it should be a spicy game. It should be interesting. And look, it's going to take time for us to see what Pirlo really wants to do. And it's going to take time for us to figure out whether it's any good.
Yeah, and I think for Roma, Gab, as you mentioned, they're going to actually attack Juventus. They faced the Sampdoria side that was playing this 4-5-1 with the striker Bonazzoli all alone on his own. There was no attacking threat coming from the midfield. So Juventus just did whatever the heck they wanted with Samp. It's not going to be like that with Roma. They're actually going to get a lot more space in behind. And one of the things I really liked about watching this Juventus side under Pirlo is how vertical they could be. Without that reference point up top, there was so much movement in the final third, and they were without basically five starters, right? Because if you look at the best Juventus 11, I still think it has Arthur, Rodrigo Bentancur, obviously Paulo Dybala, Alexandro, Matthijs de Ligt. That's nearly half the entire lineup that Pirlo had to do without.
Careful saying that there, because you know that would mean that there's no Aaron Ramsey in the lineup, and you might upset Nicky there.
Who do you keep? that's true. But exactly, that you need the rotation. But in the best starting 11, there's going to be a lot of spaces, I think, up for grabs. And even Weston McKennie, who had a good debut, he's going to have to fight for one of those midfield places. He's absolutely not guaranteed to start.
Yeah, no. And look, I think this is – I mean, you make some great points. I mean, I think this is a team that as the season evolves, if you ask yourself, you know, who can say I'm definitely starting at the weekend – it's not many players. Cristiano, obviously, Bonucci, I would imagine, but probably not too many guys beyond that because he has so many combinations. And I think this is where Pirlo's man management comes in. I mean, I wrote a piece for the website, as you know, about how, you know, one of the schools of thought in appointing Pirlo is, Well, he can be kind of like what Zidane was when he took over at Real Madrid. In other words, you know, a guy who maybe didn't talk very much, but who, when he did talk, everybody listened, a guy who would command the respect of the players. And a guy who would have the kind of hold over the players that Sarri didn't have. And I think that's really important when you're going to have to rotate a lot. You're going to have to make some difficult decisions on a week-by-week basis. So I'll be really curious to see how he manages that. I mean, I'll tell you what, like, you know, you guys were praising Ramsey's performance, and I agree with you. But if you try to play Ronaldo, another striker, whether it's Morata or Kulusevski, and Dybala in the Ramsey position, tell you what, that ain't going to work, right? You can't ask Dybala to do what Ramsey did. Bernardeschi might be able to do that. But at that point, you only have two slots open for your strikers, or really one slot, because Cristiano's going to take the other one. So how do you handle that, you know, between Kulusevski, Morata, and Dybala? Is it set in stone that he's going to play this version, that he's going to play this formation, you know? Could we see, you know, genuine wingers in there at some point? I don't know, but I'm really excited to find out. And one last thought just about Pirlo, and this is something he elaborated with a guy I know pretty well, Antonio Gagliardi, who was he's kind of like the analytics guru at the Italian FA who joined him at Juve. He's very big on the idea that when we think of players, when we think of positions, we shouldn't think about them in terms of the physical space they occupy on the pitch, but we should think about them in terms of what their function is, right? So as he put it, you know, there's builders, there's finishers, there's creators. And that's something that Pirlo has really, really embraced. And so when you talk about his wingbacks, he doesn't want his wingbacks to be defenders. He doesn't want Bonucci. He doesn't think of Bonucci, for example, building play from the back as a defender. He thinks of Bonucci as a creator when they're in possession. And that's something, I mean, I'm really curious to see how that pans out.
Going to this Roma situation and Edin Dzeko, what have you made of it and the twists and turns we've seen since? It seems Juventus didn't want to wait for their man.
Well, the narrative that we've been told, obviously Dzeko, a year left on his deal, is already on a big salary. The narrative was that everything was set for him to join Juve, but it was contingent on Roma getting Arek Milik from Napoli. Milik, for his own reasons, I guess, said no. And so the chain reaction was no longer possible. And so they went for a different chain reaction, the one where Luis Suarez moves to Atletico and Morata moves to Juve. Look, how can I say this in a nice way? Anybody who knows football and who's seen Morata play and has seen Dzeko play will know that, leaving aside who you think is better or whatever, they're completely different players, right? They do different things on the pitch. One of them runs around, the other one stands still. And one of them is tall and good in the air. The other one probably not as good in the air as he should be. I think this is driven more by the need of having a high quality body in there and then letting Pirlo decide how you're going to work around it. Juventus, you know, they revealed their losses for 2019-20, and they're absolutely huge, obviously taking a big hit with Higuain and Matuidi transfers as well. I think it was something like in the order of 80 million. They're projecting a loss for 2020-21. So, you know, they kind of have to do things on a budget, and that was the thinking. And he's, at the same time, they want to win now. And so they want to go for guys who have an instant impact. That was the thinking with Dzeko, and they're hoping Morata can do the same. I think Morata is actually probably a better fit for Juve because he's more versatile, because, you know, you can do more things with him.
There we go. Something that you two all disagree on, which we'll see a
little. He's also more handsome, right, Matteo, than Dzeko?
I mean, okay,
That's a tough one.
Two good-looking lads right there.
Hey, listen, speaking of an instant impact, let's get to Napoli, who beat Parma, because Victor Osimhen, this player who came on and made a massive difference, you had the goals from Lorenzo Insigne and Dries Mertens, but even they said afterwards he came on and he offers something so different for them. He's just 21 years old. He's got this very interesting backstory. What more can you tell us about this young player?
Well, I mean, obviously he's a guy everybody's been talking about because, you know, he came from Lille. He's a guy Lille really, really pushed. There were some people who said, oh, this is Lille marketing. You know, this is Nicolas Pepe part two. And by the way, can we just go back and just remind Napoli fans of the bullet that they dodged in not spending all that money on Pepe a year ago? I think, speaking to somebody I know at Napoli, they said they've been really impressed with the fact that, you know, not just his physicality and his athleticism, he's got plenty of energy, which, you know, you expect, the guy's 21 years old. But it was really, he's a very crafty player. He's a guy who at heart, even though he's a center forward, is unselfish. He took on, Gattuso's not a guy who gives a ton of tactical instructions in the final third. So you kind of have to understand his basic concepts. Well, he understood them straight away. He's been very aware of the players around him. And he's just somebody who's been very, very well coached. He's a really bright guy who gets things on his own. And I think, you know, he's tailor-made for that, for the way Gattuso wants to play.
Gab, the thing that struck me is that it seemed like Gattuso almost stumbled upon something that didn't quite work with Ancelotti, right? Playing more of a 4-4-2. So in the 60th minute, Napoli really were quite poor, I think, until that point. And then Gattuso takes out a central midfielder. He puts on Victor Osimhen in the second half against tired legs in a two-pronged attack. And Napoli completely changed. It's like the life was breathed back in them, and they looked so much better. They looked so much more threatening in a style that seemed like it wasn't really for Napoli. But now maybe without Jose Callejon and with a player like Osimhen, who I thought gave them so much up top with his touches, which I didn't expect, with the little back heel to set up a shot that clanged off the post, his ability to get in behind, and just his overall pace that terrifies defenses. I feel like he has that it factor. And just watching back all the goals that he scored throughout his career, he's not this natural born finisher. He just hammers the ball into the bottom corner. He chips the keeper, but it's his pace. It's also his passing. You can use him in link up. I think Gattuso might have actually stumbled into something that works better, which is that more offensive formation with Osimhen and another striker right alongside him.
You really don't want to give poor Rito credit, right? He stumbles into it, right?
It deserves all the credit, but I wonder if he knew what a big difference. It was like night and day. The difference post 60th minute when Osimhen came on changed the entire course of the game.
I mean, I think with Callejon not in the picture, I personally think it was inevitable that, you know, Napoli's future is going to be 4-3-3. However wed he is to the other things he does. I just, at his heart, you know, Gattuso, we've seen him perform in different ways. He's obviously surpassed all expectations after taking over from Ancelotti. But I think with these players, you're built for 4-3-3. And I think that was his longer-term plan. So at least I would hope that was his longer-term plan, because I think that's what makes sense. When you've got, you know, not just Insigne and Mertens, but of course you've got Chucky Lozano still there, and, you know, you need to find out what he can contribute. So I think it was always heading in that direction, but I think Osimhen just simply accelerated the process.
Yeah, Gattuso had high praise for him afterwards, saying he had a 40-year-old head on these 21-year-old shoulders, how mature he is. Gab, if you get a chance this season, it would be amazing if you could interview him, because it really is quite the backstory. Humble beginnings for him, Premier League clubs wanting him as well. And it was Aurelio De Laurentiis who convinced him to come to Napoli. But as we said, they were up against Parma. Parma's new owner was in the stands for this one, because we did see some fans and people being allowed in. You spoke to Kyle Kraus recently. Tell us a bit more about that interview and what we know now about Parma's new owner and why he chose this club.
In fact, I believe I had the first exclusive interview with Kyle Kraus. So it was funny, because when the whole thing, I got a call from somebody who's like, oh yeah. He's like, have you heard of Kyle Kraus? I'm like, no.
You're not a fan of the Des Moines Menace, is what you're saying? Well,
it was funny. I mean, I can reveal this now. The person like, oh, but the person I spoke to was one of those PR flacks who's not really a football person. He's like, oh, don't you follow MLS? He owns the Des Moines Menace. And I'm like, pretty sure that's not an MLS team. You might have just made it up. And then he's like, no, he's a billionaire. And like, oh, no, I'm not. There's a lot of billionaires in the U.S. I'm not familiar with this particular billionaire. It's like, oh, but you must know his shops. I'm like, really? What are they called? They're called Come and Go convenience stores. I'm like, all right, now you're making it up, right? But no, that part is actually true. Apparently, I did say this, no disrespect to the Midwest. I just like that it's kind of a funny name, but maybe that's part of the genius. No funnier than Piggly Wiggly, right? And Wawa. So I talked to this guy, and he's a super nice guy. And, you know, Kyle Kraus, you guys see pictures of him, see what he looks like. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, this dude is like, you know, Joe White Bread Midwest. Next thing I find out, the dude's mom's family, they're all from Sicily. And he certainly doesn't give it. I mean, he told me he's had the same issue that, you know, when he started dating his girlfriend in college, who's now his wife, she's like, why do you go on about this Italian stuff when, like, your name is Kraus and, you know, you're blonde and blue-eyed? And he's like, well, actually, you know, at least I have a vowel on the end of my name, you know, like all good Italians should, unless they're from Veneto. But anyway, yeah, so he's coming. He's got tons of enthusiasm. He's obviously at the game at the weekend. I tested him. I wanted to know, is this guy, you know, one of those, like, you know, private equity guys who's like jumped on a deal? Like, does he actually know his onions? And he kind of does. I mean, he's been a legit fan for a long time. He's been to games in Italy. I tried to get him, hey, if your whole family's from Palermo, why didn't you invest in Palermo? And he kind of sort of dodged that question a little bit. I think I know why he didn't invest in Palermo, because Parma right now are obviously a much better proposition. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, look, there's now four American owners in Serie A, plus Joey Saputo, who's obviously Canadian. And I want to make it very clear that's an entirely distinct nation for those who don't understand that. But, you know, he's still North American, right? You have Inter, who are run by a guy who's Chinese, but the Inter's president, Stephen Jiang, of course, U.S. educated. In fact, same alma mater as me. So, you know, we're
some
reaching
humble brags today from Gab, huh?
He's allowed them.
No, it's funny. We have six foreign owners in Serie A right now. No other major league in Europe has more than that, other than the Premier League. Where you guys want to guess how many foreign owners there are in the Premier League?
Oof. 12, 14.
That's something. Yeah, right. Also goes to show you didn't read my piece, because I did mention it in my interview with Kraus.
Read your piece, but maybe I just sailed over that part because I wasn't interested as much as hearing from Kyle Kraus.
But it is interesting. There's a lot of things going on there, because you know, there's a reason these guys are putting money in there during a pandemic, and I think Serie A right now is seen very much as an undervalued asset. I know of two other ownership groups that are looking at clubs in Italy and elsewhere. And obviously you're seeing what's going on with the private equity guys, you know, buying or acquiring that 10% stake in the commercial rights of Serie A over the next decade. So I don't know, interesting times ahead. I mean, goodness knows we need some sort of business minded owners after years of snake oil salesmen and crooks, among the many good Serie A presidents, of course.
Among the many good ones. And you can catch that article from Gab on ESPN.com. And it's well worth a read. And you will see that there are 14 of those Premier League owners that are foreign there. Sorry that I missed that one, Gab. Great to have you back. The fans will definitely be happy. They gave us a lot of heat last week, but it is good to have you back on Serie A.
No Gab, no party, as they all say.
Glad I could oblige.
Monday's game was Milan against Bologna, the Rossoneri getting off to a good start, 2-0. And I'd like to say that Zlatan Ibrahimovic rolled back the years, but that would be stupid to do, because over the years, he's just been consistently good at whatever age he is. In fact, afterwards, he said that if he was 20, he would have scored 4 goals and not 2. But he said, but I'm 39. No, I'm 38. So I just got 2, which made me laugh in itself, because he's even forgetting his old age, which probably is a sign that he is getting a bit older. But he, again, has proved for them, I mean, with what they've got in, you could argue that there's different signings now, but proven to be perhaps, Matteo, the re-signing of the season.
For sure. A very expensive short-term rental, but one that was so vital to bring that winning mentality back to Milan. In the past, they really didn't have the character, the personality to face adversity well. And I think ever since Zlatan Ibrahimovic came on, his leadership, which isn't traditional leadership, he's not someone that's going to pat his players on the back on the pitch. He just gives you these really intimidating stares at anytime anything goes wrong, anytime a pass doesn't go his way or a player doesn't make the run that he anticipated. I think Zlatan demands greatness from those around him. And that right there has made such a big change change that Milan suddenly have that reference point up top, someone that they can look to, someone that can pick them up when they're struggling. And all of a sudden, for the first time in like 8 or 9 years, it feels like Milan can come back from adversity and can come back from any poor result and get themselves a point or even three. So what a different change for the locker room, Kay. On the pitch performance, I think Zlatan has been monumental.
Monumental and very strong in this game with the two goals. But when Mina Rizuki now comes in, she has another player that she picked in this game that might surprise you. So, Mina, Zlatan's performance, not so much of a surprise, but we'll get your thoughts on that in a minute. But you picked out Davide Calabria in this match as your standout.
I know. I thought that he was really stupendous, to be honest. And I think it's also because you sort of don't expect that from Calabria anymore. It's weird with him and Andrea Conti. You know, you had all these big hopes and they had all this potential. And then, you know, I mean, especially for somebody who's grown up, obviously watching the Italian national team, I love the fact that it was Juve that contributed the back line. And I thought Milan would be the future. You know, you had Donnarumma, Romagnoli, Calabria, Conti, you know, hopefully Mattia Caldera at the time. Obviously, that didn't work out either. And I just thought this can be really something that we build from for the national team. And then for Milan, it just sort of all fell apart in some cases. And then Calabria just comes out with this wonderful performance. Some cynics like to say it's because he was scared of being sold. And then he just gave this interview that I just thought was, you know, was so clever. And he was just like, well, now I have stability. Now I don't have to feel like I have to worry about drama. But on a tactical level, I mean, I thought that he was, you know, very disciplined. He provided a lot. We always think of them as being a side that's sort of a little bit, you know, heavy on Theo Hernandez's wing. And I just thought that, you know, he threw Moussa Barrow off and all of a sudden Bologna lost a little bit of their shape because they're like, okay, well, I've got to actually watch this guy, which means that I've just created some space. And Calabria just threw their tactics out the window a little bit. And that's what made the difference. And I mean, if there's anyone that I want to succeed, it's always going to be the Milan defence.
I see that sometimes the fans get upset when you actually mention Zlatan's age, as if we shouldn't even need to mention it. And I suppose we shouldn't really, but we do because he just consistently delivers regardless of him getting up there close to 40 now.
I mean, he mentions it too. Like, you know, you guys were chatting about it. I mean, it's a case of at the end of the day, if he said himself, he would have scored more goals if he was 20. You can see it's like half step. It's the agility. It's something that's gone. But what's so brilliant about his age is the fact that all these kids, and it is a very young squad, look to him as that man to guide them forward, to provide sort of that stability and the winning mentality. And that's what, you know, him and Ronaldo do so well for the Italian teams, their respective ones, is that they push you further. You want to train like them. You want to look to them. You want to provide for them. And they just almost give you like a reminder every time you're on the pitch. I'm here. You better be the man. It's like a headmistress when you're in a girls' school. You know, she walks in and automatically you straighten your bag. And it's kind of like having that with Zlatan. He's the headmistress.
Yeah, and it's great to see the chemistry carrying over from the end of last season when Milan won 9 out of 12 games post-lockdown. This formation is interesting, though, this 4-2-3-1, because I was looking at Sandro Tonali, and I'm thinking, how is he going to get on the pitch if it stays in this formation? Because you're not going to touch the Bennacer Kessié holding midfield combo. I thought that they became one of the best duos in front of the defense in all of Serie A. And then up front, that's not really Tonali's position to play behind the striker like a Calhanoglu. I think Rebic is a lock on the left-hand side. Really, the only question is the right-wing position where you have either Salamakers or Castillejo or maybe even Brahim, who came over from Real Madrid. So there's going to be chances for Tonali, but there's also no rush. I saw a lot of panic. People saying, Tonali's not playing. That's fine. He's still very young. He just came over from Brescia. He still needs to learn the Milan way, and he will have time to get on the pitch. Where do you see him fitting in, Mina?
Yeah, this is a really tough question. And I also think, like, why are you in such a rush? I mean, it's exactly what you said. A lot of August, he wasn't training. He realized that, you know, obviously Milan is the destination that he's going to go to. And then he's just recently started getting back into the things. He's got a few minutes under his belt. Maybe he can get 25 minutes in the Europa League game, you know, slowly build up his energy levels. But this is a very good question. And I thought about this and I thought, you know, you're right, because they do have Bennacer and Kessié and you don't want to break that up. But it's a little bit like, where do you fit in Thiago Alcantara in Liverpool, right? Because they already are a stacked team and it all flows perfectly. But when it comes to those matches in which you need to break something, I think that you're not going to have him just come on the, you know, off the bench and try to provide something. But I do think that what Pioli would like to create is flexibility, which is the sense of we don't always have to play with the same formation. Sometimes we can play with all three or perhaps without one of them and go for a more creative midfield as opposed to one that, you know, has these certain elements. Maybe Çalhanoğlu won't play if Tonali is playing. They play different positions, but perhaps in many ways open up the field in the same way. So it's going to be interesting because I don't think you can really place him on a wing. It's got to be through the middle where I think he gives his best. And it's really got to be in that midfield. And ideally, that's the midfield three is where I'd put him.
What about you?
I think the only way right now is you go 4-3-3. And you're right that Pioli, he's a bit of a chameleon, right? He's not really stuck to one system. He can adapt based on his players, something that maybe Maurizio Sarri can take a little note from. And with Pioli, he comes in. First of all, he's super well-liked behind the scenes by all the players. He's very well-respected. They all love working for him. And you can really see that they have this calmness on the pitch. They look like a happy group. But there is no rush for Tonali. So unless you change the formation, he'll get the Coppa Italia games, he'll get some Europa League games. You still need to alternate in Serie A as well. Benacer is not going to play all 38 games.
Well, that's exactly what it is.
There's going to be time. Exactly.
Also, I just want to pick up on what you were saying about Pioli. And I was just wondering, like, you know, people talk a lot about the fact that he is tactically flexible. And he's somebody who, weirdly enough, is a little bit like Ranić in the sense that he always looks for the little things that he can do to get the best out of you. So it's like, oh, we're very constant on Theo Hernandez. So let's make the other side quite balanced. And he will look to that. What I love is how often he'll call his players. You know, we talked about Gasperini and Castagna last week. And what you get with Pioli is during lockdown, everyone says, they always got a call from him, always felt that he believed in them. And I think that's the difference with Milan. You know, when a team is trying to build and trying to go forward, to have the stability is one thing. But to have a coach who communicates so effectively, coming from Marco Giampaolo especially, and having, you know, like filling them with that kind of confidence and being like, listen, Calabria, I think you can do this. You know, we don't have to rely on Theo Hernandez. You were supposed to be the future of Italy. Like, show me what you can do and fill him with that stability and passion. I think it's just, that's what Pioli's strength is.
You just made me wonder, if Marco Giampaolo was a paint color, what would it be?
It would be an eggshell, I think. Or a beige. It'd be like a grayish, I'd say.
Listen, so there's a lot of expectation around Milan this season. I'm going to ask you both. I'll start with you, Matteo. How much can we actually take away from those results over Bologna and before that Shamrock Rovers?
I think we should analyze every game and every player as a paint color
from now on.
I love that.
Yeah, I like this idea.
Okay, so how much do you take over the win over Bologna? Quite a bit. Bologna were a difficult side to break down and to beat under Sinisa Mihailovic. I thought that they were actually quite a tricky side for a lot of the big teams last season. But what we saw from Milan is a unit that finally is cohesive, that finally believes in themselves, that finally faces adversity well. And it's a better team with much more depth than they had in the last campaign. I actually have huge high hopes for Brahim. We talked to some of the Madrid insiders and they're all going crazy about him. They're saying this is a next superstar if he ever gets the chance, and he can't even get a start right now for Milan. So I think the sky's the limit. I don't think Milan's going to challenge for Scudetto, Mina, but top four is already a huge step. They haven't been to the Champions League since when, 2012?
Yeah, that's exactly when we were talking, me and Nikki on ESPN, and we were both saying at the time that we felt like Milan could certainly make top four this season. This is the first time I've actually said that in so long, and you really do feel that they have a chance. I do think it's, obviously, this is just the first game. Bologna are a team that shipped a lot of goals last season. I think only the relegation battlers and perhaps Genoa and Torino conceded more goals, but they are that. But they are very good, like you said, going forward. They do cause a little bit of drama, and they did that in the last 15 minutes. That's something that needs to be curbed there. You can't let teams back in. They've got to control and manage the result a little bit more, which is why it's important sometimes to introduce a little bit of veteran experience in this squad that is so young. Or at least if they are so young, just keep them running for 90 minutes and trying to score goals. They're not going to be a team that should ever really protect the lead. And I really want to make sure that that never happens with them. This is not a Juve side that can just manage the score.
I mean, I'm taking notes, and I've done a tally of all the times that Ibrahimovic has given a death stare to Çalhanoğlu. The first came in the 13th minute. There was another one to Castillejo, I believe, but it's one of my favorite subplots of watching Ibrahimovic is just those looks when a player doesn't make the runs. He just gives them this, with those beady little eyes of his, he stares into their soul, and you can see that his teammates are terrified of him. It's amazing.
And that's what you need to win.
Yeah, especially when you see that player's name anyway. as a commentator, I would be giving death stares to. You had to get everybody, you had to get the man himself, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, to tell America how to say his name.
Çalhanoğlu. It's a bit of a silent G.
So listen, you were talking, Mina, about getting these results under their belt. The Derby della Madonnina is not too far off, but they've got two league games before that against Spezia and Crotone. Surely that's 6 points for them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that most teams should be able to get 6 points against Spezia and Crotone. I mean, Benevento is really the only one that you might be a little bit scared about from the teams that are newly promoted. But, I mean, you're right, Inter's obviously the big test. Weirdly enough, I believe in Milan when it comes to the big games. I just want to make sure that they remain concentrated. And obviously with Zlatan, you do. But in these types of matches, you know, always going to use their passion, not let anyone come in and sort of, you know, put them to the sword or get them to lose their confidence or lose a little bit of their aggression towards the end. It's about staying concentrated the full 90 minutes. But this should be an easy 6 points. Honestly speaking, it would be very disappointing if Milan don't make the top four, considering how much they've invested in, considering the fact that they do have stability this season. They've stuck by, you know, certain principles. And you saw management last season have different ideas. You know, some of them wanted to be more sustainable, like Gazidis, where you felt like Maldini wanted to bring back the essence of Milan, which is a team that always is going to compete at the highest levels. And you're like, oh, where's this going to go if he's trying to sign Zlatan and you want like these kids, you know? But they all are coming together. And a very well-managed club should be able to be making top four, certainly over the likes of Lazio at the moment.
Yeah, so is that who it would be at the detriment of, Lazio, if they're to make the top four?
I think so, even though Lazio overachieved last season. Yeah. Atalanta is still one that I'm not going to count out of a top four spot. There's definitely a lot of teams vying for the third and fourth position. Right now, I'd say that my only locks for top four, Mina, are Juventus and Inter. I think Inter is the one that can really challenge Juventus all the way until the end. And then the third and fourth places, to me, are completely up for grabs by like four or five teams.
Well, we saw a rare sight this week in Italy. Antonio Conte smiling. And I mean full smile, ear to ear smile. Why is this? Well, it's because he got his man back, Arturo Vidal. So let's talk about Inter. Let's talk about the fact that this has happened, Mina, and that Antonio Conte is happy for now.
It's interesting, you know, like when it comes to Antonio Conte, obviously we know he's a winning coach. Obviously we know he has a team in which he can certainly challenge for the Scudetto and should be challenging for the Scudetto. But, you know, it's this choice of Vidal. I mean, I get this. Look, I was a Juventus fan and, you know, I love the whole heart and, you know, the guy's a warrior. He really gives it all on his pitch. But for me, Vidal is kind of like a bark worse than a bite, you know. When it comes to what I really need right now for Inter is for them to compete in Europe. Obviously, they want to win the title and that is important for them and their brand. But really, if they want to challenge Juventus and they want to reach these top places, they have to make money. And the easiest way to make money is to do well in Europe. And when it comes to these big matches in which you do need these leaders that he is trying to build and rely upon, which is Arturo Vidal, he is not the kind of guy that I would rely on. I remember him under Allegri when it came to the final against Barcelona, and he disappointed. He was probably the worst player for Barcelona against Roma. He did nothing to shine or to try to alleviate any of the pain when Barcelona faced Liverpool. You look now, he sat there and talked about them needing to change the DNA, and it's not always about tiki-taka, and you know, teams now are very well prepared tactically and are strong, and all of this talk, and then he faces Thiago Alcantara, they lose by a ridiculous result, 8-2, and once again, he's one of the poorest players on the pitch. And so when it comes to these big matches, the ones that Antonio Conte needs them to raise their heads and act and play properly, I'm not sure he's the guy that you're going to always want to depend on. Is he the guy for the present when you're trying to just challenge for the Scudetto? Yes, I do think I get that. But in the long run, I think how much further they could have gone with a player like Sandro Tonali. Maybe not this season. Maybe he's not going to be the guy that wins you a Scudetto. But perhaps in the long run, he's the one that can provide the magic in Champions League and perhaps bring them the money that they need to really challenge across the globe and not just in Italy. And that's my fear with Antonio Conte. He thinks too much about the present, not enough about the future.
Why would he think about the future, though? He had to be convinced to even stay at Inter. It seemed like he was going to leave. He's not going to be there probably in 3 years. He's going to ride out this season. If things go well, maybe he'll stay another season. But why would he care about a player in Sandro Tonali that is going to be in his peak in 5 or 6 or 7 years? That was
wow,
a short...
Long,
well, I'd assume in his mid-20s, that's when he's going to be at his best. But Arturo Vidal certainly isn't at his best. And the last time we saw Arturo Vidal in Serie A, that was a very long time ago. That was when he was truly at the peak of his powers. Then he went to Bayern Munich, then he went to Barcelona. And now he's in the tail end. He's entering his twilight. He's probably going to be playing in China in 2 years. And you bring him over, he can be a rotational player now. You're absolutely right. And he's not going to be dependent on every single game. He is maybe a bit better for the now to bring in for the likes of Saints and Barella and flip-flop those players, given that they're playing in three competitions. But it is a very nearsighted decision and one that makes total sense. Conte's not going to stick around at Inter for 10 years. What does he care about the exponential value that Tonali is going to grow to in a decade's time? He doesn't care about that. He wants to win now.
Is this good planning? Then I mean, you know, listen, Antonio Conte might win you a league trophy, absolutely, sure. But, you know, what about planning for the future? If you really do want to take on these teams like Juventus to be the next Juventus or to be a better version of them, then surely you have to, you know, build for the future. And that is doing what Milan is doing. That is sometimes going for a coach who's willing to stay there and not constantly be putting you on edge about where his next future is going to be. And with this side, let's be honest, let's say he does go, who's going to come next season and want to work with, you know, I don't know, all these ex-Premier League players, you know, ones who are over 33, Arturo Vidal, poor Ashraf Hakimi, what is he joining exactly if there is no long-term vision at the end of the day, you know?
Just really quickly, I think that the long-term planning, a team like Milan that was in rebuilding mode, that isn't expected to challenge for the title, but if you're challenging for the title now, you would want to build for the now, given the players that you have. We're seeing the same thing with Juventus and Cristiano Ronaldo.
Okay, so before we say goodbye to you, Mina, until next week, what are you expecting to see in terms of lineup or just in terms of what we're going to get on the pitch when we do see Inter back in action against Fiorentina this weekend?
Well, we know that basically when it comes to Antonio Conte, he likes to train Antonio Conte players. So it's ones who are going to listen to the instructions. Eriksen, you know, Candreva, obviously there's all this chat about him leaving. So there's definitely going to be Barella, there could be Brozovic, and it's going to be, you know, his usual two up front, the usual crosses into the box. I don't think there's too much unpredictability when it comes to Antonio Conte's play. What they will be is they'll try to outdo the opponent, they'll work harder, they'll run harder, that's what you expect from them. But this smile on his face and seeing Arturo Vidal suggests that, you know, he is still, Conte really believes in his strengths, really believes in his own vision of football. And he feels if he's got players like that who are happy to carry out his instructions on the pitch, then they can win. And with Fiorentina and what's going on with them and really the man in charge on the bench, I think it will be a win for Inter and it should be an easy one.
Antonio Conte smiling. Enjoy it while it lasts, everybody, because it will not last. Mina, thanks. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you.
So that is it for the latest edition of Serie Awesome. If you are listening to us in the United States, you'll be able to hear Matteo Bonetti every week on the call for Serie A games. But for the rest of the team, you can catch them all on ESPN FC on our digital channels. And for Gab Marcotti as well, you can catch his articles every week on ESPN.com. From me, though, Kay Murray, and him, Matteo Bonetti. We'll see you again next week.